Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council Chambers. Today is Wednesday, October 6, 2010, and it's 9:30 in the morning. Before we gavel in to our official proceedings, I'd ask that Christopher Rauschenberg and Todd Tabutis please come forward. I've been a big fan of the organization that I am honored to recognize today, and I would like to read the following proclamation, and then if Christopher and Todd would say a few words, that would be great. Whereas 35 years ago, five young Portland-based photographers, Robert DeFranco, Craig Hickman, Ann Hughes, Christopher Rauschenberg, and Terry Todemeyer founded a nonprofit organization, the Oregon Center for the Photographic Arts, which has become known internationally as Blue Sky. And whereas Blue Sky's founders established an ambitious public venue dedicated to promoting the careers of exceptional photographic artists around the world through exhibitions, programs, and publications. And whereas in 3.5 decades since opening its doors on October 5th, 1975, Blue Sky has presented 675 exhibitions by 573 different photographers, along with 47 group shows. And whereas both the Portland Center for the Performing Arts and the Office of Mayor Sam Adams are hosting Blue Sky exhibitions of regional photographers from October to January of this year in recognition of Blue Sky's 35th anniversary. And whereas Blue Sky's founders will be honored at a special reception on October 8th, 2010, as well as a public open house on October 9th, 2010, both in Blue Sky's home in Portland's historic DeSoto building, now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim October 5th through October 9th to be days of celebration for Blue Sky's 35th anniversary in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe these days. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm Todd Tabutis. On behalf of Blue Sky's Board of Directors, staff, and many dedicated volunteers, thank you, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Saltzman, for this wonderful proclamation, along with Commissioners Leonard and
Fish.
Your ongoing enthusiastic support for the arts in the city is deeply appreciated by its citizens. Thank you. As executive director, I've been at Blue Sky's helm for almost 1 year now, and while that's merely 1/35th of the organization's storied history, I can honestly say that it's a true privilege to have inherited the reins of one of Portland's most respected visual arts nonprofits. But as you noted in your proclamation, Mayor Adams, Blue Sky would not exist if it weren't for the passion, ingenuity, and foresight of five young Portland photographers who back in 1975 simply wanted a place to show the best photography they could find. One of them sits beside me today, and it's my pleasure to introduce Blue Sky's current board president and co-founder, Christopher Rauschenberg.
Thanks, Todd. I wanted to say that the five of us who started the gallery were really just the first of what ended up being at least 1,000 volunteers who have added to the vision that our original vision was fairly small. It was a gallery the size of a freight elevator paying $40 a month rent on 23rd and Lovejoy Street. And we just thought, oh, well, other people will help us run the gallery. And we never appreciated the extent that people would get in behind us. We thought we were just walking down the street. We looked around and we were leading a parade. And I think that vision has ended up with us going into this beautiful DeSoto building with five other galleries and having this huge, gorgeous space. And I feel like this is a gallery that's going to continue on into the future and be part of Portland's heritage for years to come.
Thank you very much. Let me present you with the proclamation. And if my colleagues would join, we'll have a quick picture. Would you like us all to get in the picture, too?
Where do we go?
I mean, you're a photographic gallery. That would be awesome.
We like to do the photographing, not the photographing.
Put your hands on the photographic.
Oh, okay.
There's a tradition.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Act surprised.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your work.
Thanks.
And we won't consider it rude if you just all want to get up in mass and
trying to get rid of us.
We're actually used to that. You bet. All right. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good.
Can you please call the roll?
Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present, so we will proceed with communications. I understand 1311. Please read item 1311.
Request of Michael Krupp to address council regarding the rationale behind assigning a sole female officer to a car when her regular partner is out.
Understand Mr. Krupp was not available. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1312?
Request of Catherine Merritt to address council regarding a woman-owned and operated construction company perspective on the shortcomings of government efforts to increase involvement and success by women and minorities in public contracting.
Ms. Merritt, please come forward. Welcome to the council chambers. You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help count down the 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Merritt. Thank you for giving me a few minutes this morning. I'm a little nervous. I'd rather be banging nails than sitting in this chamber, but I'm going to go for this.
Don't be nervous. It's just us.
Thank you. I started in construction in 1978. I moved to Portland in 2000 after years in the Peace Corps as a shop teacher, and within a short period of time, I found work in construction. This has been a very good place for me to work in construction. For the first 8 years of my company, I was in residential construction, and as you all know, that industry is practically dead right now. Small construction companies are struggling to survive, and we're all competing for a very small pocket of work. A lot of that work right now is coming through the government agencies, and companies like mine that are trying to stay in business are exploring work they're unfamiliar with, and that is public contracting and commercial contracting. So my 2 minutes left is last year I was hired by Walsh Construction as a subcontractor to work on a housing authority job. And I have 1 year exposure to public contracting. I'd like to say the number of women I see working on job sites is still incredibly small. I appreciate the efforts that the City of Portland has made to try to increase the number of women and minorities in contracting. In preparation for today, I didn't read, the disparity study from 2008-2009. The numbers look really positive. They are not reflected on the job site. I was a general contractor on a $1 million piece of work for the Housing Authority of Portland, and my company was one of the only companies with a significant number of women on its crew. Now, I believe the number of WBEs has increased. I have different opinions about how that's reflected, but the number of women is still challenged. I would like to ask the City of Portland to go beyond the disparity study and encourage its project managers, its purchasing department, to look for women working in construction. Beyond the WBE, beyond the disparity study, when you are on a job site, if you do not see women, I want it to bother you. I am the only woman showing up in a lot of cases to bid on jobs. I want more of us out there. People are not bothered, and they think it's okay. I would like the City of Portland PMs to look for women. I would like the Workforce Hiring and Training to do a better job of making sure that the percentage of women on jobs is over 5%. I think I've used up my time. Thank you.
Are you familiar with Connie Ashbrook?
I was on the board of Oregon Tradeswomen when Connie was first hired as executive director in 1994.
So I really encourage you to join with her in advocacy because there's a lot of support there. It does bother us, and that's why we've put the money into the disparity study,
mm-hmm.
so that we could get an accurate reflection of what's going on. And it's not enough. And we've made a number of reforms just in the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. But we got a lot more to do.
So yes, and I'll help with that.
So your comments are well taken. I'd also encourage you to talk to Christine Moody back mm-hmm. there in the white shirt, who okay. runs the procurement program. And if you wouldn't mind, we only can give you 3 minutes. If you wouldn't mind giving her additional feedback, that might be helpful for us to continue to push forward with reforms. And really appreciate your advocacy.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for communications item 1313?
Request of Elizabeth Gibson to address council regarding the need for city government to focus on programs that are working to help small business and stop the approach that pits small business against each other. She notified us she's not able to make it.
Okay. That moves us to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 1314?
Amend ordinance to change effective date of amendments to Northwest District Plan and official zoning and comprehensive plan maps in portion of Northwest Portland. Fritz?
Again, congratulations to the mayor and to the neighborhood associations for coming to agreement on this. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Thank you. Aye. 1314 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 1315?
Amend intergovernmental agreement with Oregon Department of Transportation to revise the funding contributions and extend construction and project completion dates for the 47th and Alderwood Signal projects. Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1315 is approved. Can you please read the title for procurement report, item number 1316?
Accept bid of Dunn Construction, Inc. for the UIC remediation project, phase 2, for $794,234.
Morning.
Morning. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. You have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award in the low bid to the low bidder in the amount of $794,234. The city identified 11 divisions of work for potential minority, women, and emerging small business subcontracting opportunities. Subcontracting participation on this project is at 100%, and work is being performed in the areas of concrete cutting and hauling services. I will turn this back over to council if there are any questions regarding the bidding process. And Lloyd Stoning is here from BES to answer technical questions.
Discussion from council.
What is UIC?
Stands for Underground Injection Control. It's a fancy word for a sump.
Thank you.
I think we have 9,000 of them. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. Just a few. Any other discussion? As a purchasing report, can we vote on it with three, or do we have to wait? Okay. I'll entertain a motion to accept the procurement report.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carly, can you please call the roll on accepting the procurement report, item number 1316?
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1316 is approved. Can you please read the title for first reading non-emergency ordinance, item number 1317?
Authorize a contract with Day CPM Services, LLC, for owner's representative services for the Interstate Maintenance Facility Rehabilitation Project.
Hi, Mr. Chef.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. What are we looking at here?
Well, you're not looking at my chief engineer or my project manager. I suspect they're frantically running across the street at this moment.
Good. We like to run ahead of schedule.
We have two ordinances that are together. Would it be okay to read the second one as well?
Sure. Can you please read item 1318?
Authorized contract with Michael Willis Architects for design services for the Interstate Maintenance Facility Rehabilitation Project.
So, as you know, we are, this is David Gray, our capital projects manager. And as you know, we are working on the replacement of the interstate facility where are maintenance and construction, operations, warehouse, stores is located. We've been needing to replace this building for more than a decade. We had a plan to do this in 2007. We had actually contracts signed and ready to bring to council for the owner's rep position in 2007 and didn't because of some of the things that were going on around LT2. So we are at the process where we're picking up where we left off for this project, which is approximately a $50 million project. These two pieces of the project are to begin moving forward from the master plan phase to the actual design phase of the facility. I have some basic information. We did the normal request for proposal process. We had a number of submittals for both the contracts. We had a citizen member on the selection committee, Jenny O'Connor, who's a member of our budget committee. We had citizen member who is an expert in construction of buildings on the committee. I was going to run through those in general, but I understand that there was a question from Commissioner Fritz's office about whether or not we should be using BGS for that service. And what we did was in 2007, as I said, we had planned on bringing this forward to the city council. We had contracts signed with DayCPM, excuse me, there's two very similar named groups, DayCPM, and we put a hold on that. Now, at the time, we had had discussions with BGS about, we had not entered into negotiations or anything along those lines, but BGS at the time was working on the fire bond, the ECC, so they were more or less fully booked. We did not circle back to them when we picked up this year and said, are you available now? We moved forward with the original group, with the original contract. The original contract contractor did honor the fees that they gave us at the time back in 2007. So they've held their fees to the point the same level that they were back in 2007. So we did not circle back to them. We simply picked up where we left off. There is, we do have a final negotiated amount of $3.2 million. It's $4.5 million less than we were projecting. We do have contracts that reflect the usage of six State of Oregon certified MWESB firms as subconsultants, with about 24% of that contract work being performed by those consultants. I'm trying to anticipate the questions we usually get asked, and I think I've covered them, but if I haven't, I'm certainly open for questions at this point.
You forgot my question. Green building.
Excuse me?
The LEED standard?
Oh, actually, no, I skipped. One of the changes in scope that has occurred since 2007 was some additional geotech engineering and the additional LEED associated with the LEED work associated with the project that wasn't anticipated several years ago. So, yes, and David, I don't know what the level is, so you're going to have to answer that.
Well, I think by city policy, it has to be LEED gold. And I was looking through the architect documents, and it talks about aspirational goal, not.
Well, the city requirement, Commissioner Salzman, is for us to meet LEED gold.
Okay.
And that is what we will achieve, for sure.
So it was in my notes. I failed to remember that was going to be a question.
Okay. Great.
Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you for explaining the process. Circumstances have changed since 2007, and so my first question when I looked at this was why we didn't go out and rebid it. We're currently getting bids coming in at a third to a half of what the estimates were.
And this actually, David, I'm going to let you answer that. I was going to say this was significantly less than what we were originally budgeting. But we did not rebid it. You're correct. We went with the original contract and the original bids that we received.
And I think that's honorable, certainly, to the contract was put on hold through no fault of any party. And there's no question that the building does need to be replaced. So,
We did, I know that Jeff was asked whether or not the design portion of the contract still appeared to be reasonable for designing a building of this size. David would tell you that typically the design costs for a building of this size and magnitude, approximately $50 million project, 10% is a reasonable amount of that project. Our overall cost is going to be significantly less than that, $3.8 million, and we were estimating $4.5 million, and that's a $50 million project. So we are coming in below that, what you would call industry standard.
So then I'm wondering about the amount of this contract, and also that circumstances have changed. The facilities is no longer working on the fire bond that's wrapped up, and my understanding is they would have capacity to do it now. And I'm thinking of the development services staff being engaged to help design the emergency
The ECC, right.
Yeah. So that again has changed, that we have city staff who have been laid off who perhaps could do some of this work. And so I'm wondering about reevaluating how we're going about doing this.
We didn't do that. We can certainly... are you going to add something?
No. Okay. Yeah, I mean, so the question is, and I think David's covered it very well. The fact that we basically picked up where we left off in 2007, we also revisited the fees of both of these consulting teams, and we compared those with other projects that we have ongoing, and the fees seem to be in line with what the current fees are coming in at. But
this is a professional service contract, right?
That's, yes, it is. Both of them are, yes.
Two.
So, and this is a first reading, so maybe there can be some more discussion before next week, because it is $1.3 million for the contract to be the owner's representative, which perhaps facilities could now do. The other question that I have on the second agenda item regarding the design services is what are we buying? Is it a Cadillac or a Chevy? I mean, has the PERB reviewed the proposed elements of the design? Who has looked at what we're buying?
We have stripped out a fair amount of the project to reduce the cost internally. The PERB doesn't look at the actual design of a building, but one of the reasons why the building is coming in at less than what it was originally going to be was because we've pulled the security and the emergency management group out. They're going to be part of the ECC. That's changed the cost. It's changed the footprint of the building. We're also looking at not moving the entire interstate operation off-site while we build. We're going to build it and then demo the existing building. So we've done a number of things like that on the design of the building to bring the cost down from where it was originally projected when the first interstate master plan was put together. On your first point, Jeff and I were kibitzing back before we were called up, and there will be a conversation over the next few days before we come back for the vote, the second reading.
I appreciate that. So on the design, you said the PERB doesn't review the design.
Not the design.
The PERB reviews the rate increases required to pay for it.
Right.
So who or what entity looks at what is being proposed in terms of the facilities? Is there any kind of citizen input into what we're buying?
Only from a very broad global perspective. The Budget Advisory Committee and the PERB are aware of the project. They have all had, except for the newest members of both the PERB and the Budget Advisory Committee, they've all had spent time at the facility. They all know about the facility and the fact that it has to be replaced. But from the perspective of, you know, what type of windows should it have or exterior, none of those sorts of conversations occur.
I mean, doesn't the project have to come back to it? This is design services, right?
It is.
But the construction will have to come back to it, yes.
Which includes us signing off on the assumptions of design. Is that right?
Right. But I don't believe, for instance, the ECC is pretty well underway. I don't believe the PERB or the Budget Advisory Committee looks at, you know, how should the building look or how should it be situated on the property.
We had some discussion at council, though, about what's in the Emergency Communications Center building, mm-hmm. and I saw layouts of generally what's in it.
Exactly.
Is that available for
Oh, sure,
for
absolutely.
This?
We have our master plan, and then we have some revised, what do you call them, general how the site would look and laid out and how much is dedicated to stores and how much is dedicated to office space and how much is dedicated to the various functions out at the building.
Yeah, if I could get a briefing on that and also some information on how it gets to $50 million, what are the expensive parts of that? Because your point is well made, Mayor, that we do get to review the contract, but by that time it's been designed and it's a little late for me to say, well, why are we doing this particular piece?
We will set something up with you.
Thank you very much.
All right, these move to a second reading next week, unless there's objections. Does anyone wish to testify on these matters? Sorry, on either 1317 or 1318? All right, moves over.
Thank you.
Second
Thank you.
Reading. Carla, can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 1319?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to execute an easement for the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project, number E07384, and authorize payment. Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
It's very exciting to get that done.
Congratulations.
Nobody knows about it, but I do.
You should brag about it more.
That's all right. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 1320?
Authorize a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for the Argyle and 13th Pump Station Remodel Project, number E08874. Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Very important, but I don't have the same warmth. Aye. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, item number 1321?
Amend contract with KPFF for additional work and compensation for the South Airport Basin Phase 4, project number E06790. Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1321 is approved, and we are adjourned. I didn't beat your record, but I was close. For the shortest council.
Nicely done.
Thanks. How are you, sir?
Can I
start with
you, sir?
Sure.
I'm assuming you had the police. How are you doing? I would stop by the policeman.
Oh, no.
And my life is sort of crazy. And
your light on your car?
I don't know. I didn't know what was wrong with my car.
Okay.
The thing is, you know, I complied. And he made my passenger show ID, and I looked up, and she was really afraid, you know. And that sort of just ticked me off. I mean, why would she have to show ID? I mean, is this the law?
My understanding, it, most people don't, when you're a passenger in an automobile, most people actually don't know the rules. But the officer can ask to see the ID of anyone in the vehicle. That's state law. Were they rude or?
No, but just the idea like her fear, you know, just, you know,
sure.
I'm in trouble, you know.
Yeah.
I said, well, you don't have to show no ID. You're not in South Africa. Still in America, is this some kind of law?
It's always been the law.
Hmm?
It's always been the law. They don't always ask for everyone's ID, but under the law, they can ask for everyone. Had someone else ask this question a couple months ago, and I was surprised to learn.
That actually happened to my son when he was a passenger in a car. He and his, there were four of them in the car, and they were all asked to show their IDs.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I mean, you know, you feel like you're harassing your own neighbor.
Well, right now we're.
I'm 67 years old.
Right.
When are they going to get the foot up off my neck?
When they're going to get
it? Like, I'm 67 years old.
Sure.
When are they going to get the foot up off my neck? I can take it. I mean, I don't want to fight, but I will.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the way. I got heart problems. I got a whole lot of stuff. I don't like to be bullied. I'm not mad at you. No.
I appreciate the sincerity
like,
of your concern.
I didn't like that situation. I mean, it's different if we criminals running, you know, to suit or something.
Sure.
You know, I can understand. I mean, I have respect for the police. You know, I don't have no disrespect for them, but I still won't be pushed.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't win, you know, and all the good is shooting would be another so-and-so kill,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I won't go by myself. I guarantee you that. If they're going to come at me, I won't go by myself.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't get to that. We, so they do.
I mean, it's like maybe respect. You know, I mean, you want respect, you seem like you
sure.
don't give it.
Well, this is an example where, you know, commissioner's son has asked for his ID, and, you know, it's obviously Caucasian. So
I'm not impressed with Caucasian.
You're not impressed?
I'm American Indian.
Well, my point is that...
I was here when you got here.
Yeah, my point is that they do have, under state law, they do have the ability to do that, and they should be asking for it. In a respectful way, they can ask for, you know, they'll stop anybody and ask for them, and sometimes, you know, you might not know it, but they're looking for a runaway that might or might not come anywhere near matching the description of someone that you might be with. They might be looking for someone who is suspected of something else, and traffic stops are a way for them to sometimes... you know, apprehend or save runaways. I mean, that's as long as they do it in a respectful manner and they do it following the law, that's what I'm most concerned about. And I know it's startling. I'm also getting a lot of questions from our parking patrol people and complaint about the fact that the state is getting on us for giving people tickets for not having licenses on their front bumper. And suddenly the state is making us, you know, come down on people for that. So I apologize for the fact that it's startling. I mean, I know how that feels, but I know it is within the law that they're allowed to do that. And I know that they'll do that, especially if there's an amber alert. I don't know how